Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Britt Carlson, one of our pastors at Portland Mennonite. Welcome, Britt. It's great to have you with me.
Oh, welcome, Gloria, too. I'm so excited to be here.
Excellent. As we do, we start at the beginning, and I know a little bit about you, and I do know that you are a native Oregonian.
I am.
Where did life start for you?
Well, I was actually born over at St. Vincent's Hospital, so I am a native Oregonian, and I was raised down in Lake Oswego, 15511 Tanager Drive. My parents are still there. And yeah, had a wonderful growing up down in LO, went to public school, and then my mom helped to start a classical Christian school, which is where you learn Greek and Latin and read Plato way too early. And so I was there for a couple of years, and then I went to Westside Christian, which was a private Christian high school down in Lake Oswego as well.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
So I am the oldest of three girls. Siri is my middle sister, and she is 30. She's a high school English teacher over in Gladstone, and she is seriously dating a guy named Andrew, who we love. And then Paige is my youngest sister, and she's 6 years younger than me. Siri's 3 years younger than me, and then Paige is 6 years younger than me. And she is married to Peter, and they live down in Milwaukee. So my whole family is in the Portland area, and we love it.
Did you ever wish you had a brother?
Funny you ask. You know, growing up, I never wanted a brother, but when we were, I want to say I was probably 24 or so, I was home from Duke, where I went to grad school, where I went to seminary, and my mom had the newspaper open, and I still think about this. It was open to foster kids, who a page that had sort of foster kids who are needing to be adopted. And there was a boy in there named TJ. And my mom was reading it, and then I read it, and my sisters read it. And all of us were like, oh my gosh, I think we need to explore this. He would have been probably 6 years younger or so than my sister Paige. But all of us were, as the Methodists say, our hearts were strangely warmed, and we all just sort of got emotional. But when we took it to my dad was like, sorry. So my dad put the kibosh on it, but all of us still think about TJ. So that is the only time that I've ever really wanted a brother, but we still think about him, and every so often I try to Google him, but there's only the information of his first name. So that is that.
Do you know why your dad was so against it?
Well, my dad is slower to get on board with things than the rest of us. But he also was in a really busy time of work. And I think just like one more thing he couldn't handle at that time of life. So
what were some of the things that your family liked to do together as a family when you were growing up?
Oh, man. Well, one of my strongest family memories is we would get up in the morning, and my dad had an office about 5 to 7 minutes away from 15511 Tanager Drive, where we grew up. And he would go into work early in the morning, but he would come back at 7:30, and we would all have breakfast together. And my mom would usually have Celtic music playing in the background. And we still listen to Connie Dover. That was one of the CDs that we would listen to, which dates me right there that we were listening to CDs. But we'd listen to Celtic music, and we'd pray before breakfast. And every other day we'd have a hot breakfast, which often was scrambled eggs, which I hate scrambled eggs. That was one thing we really liked to do together, was just eat meals together. We also would go out to Sun River a lot. My grandparents had a place out there. It's where my mom and dad actually met and married. We played a lot of tennis together. My dad was a tennis teacher before he became a sales rep. So we played a lot of tennis and we did sports and were active. We were definitely active growing up.
It sounds like church has always been an important part of your life. Talk a little more about the school that your mother started in, church as you were growing up.
Yeah. Church and faith, I would say it was the heart of our family. My parents think that I like over-exaggerate how much it was growing up, but I don't think I do. Because I have memories of coming downstairs in the morning and my parents, like especially my mom, like having her quiet time in the morning with her devotional and reading her Bible and praying. And she says that she didn't do that every day, but I have a memory of her doing that every day. So it was obviously significant and really just a natural part of our lives. I grew up at a church down in Tualatin called Rolling Hills. And I can remember driving home early from Sunrise River to make it back to church on time on Sunday morning. But yeah, I had a really, really wonderful experience in church growing up. And some of my closest friends are from the small groups that I was a part of when I was in junior high and high school. And when I was in high school, I led small groups for elementary kids and junior high kids. And we did mission trips. Even when I was in junior high, they would take us junior hires. I think we would go to like Cascade Locks, big mission trips to Cascade Locks and do some sort of vacation Bible schools up there. And I went to Mexico on a mission trip when I was in high school. And so that was just a huge part of my life. And personally, you know, just learning who God was, and C.S. Lewis was a big part of that journey for me also when I was in high school, sort of made God more real to me. But my friends, which you brought up my high school, is that in high school, sort of formed a really strong group of friends, girlfriends, who also had really genuine walks with God. And those friendships have been an enormous source of strength to me over the years. And their faith has been an encouragement to me on a really personal level. So that was really important. But that Christian school, the classical Christian school, Ambassador Christian School, it only existed for 2 years. It was so fun. But it was a unique experience. We wore uniforms. I think there were 10 people tops in my class, and it was a combined 7th and 8th grade. So it was itty bitty, but it was super fun. Because it was so small, we could convince our teachers to do things that aren't quite normal. Like usually that had to do with taking us to a local convenience store and getting us candy. So, and we would play tag as a whole school, like all 60 or 70 students, K through 8th, would play tag at recess. So it was super, super fun.
The church that you said that you attended, Rolling Hills, was that a non-denominational church or?
Yeah, it was. It was non-denominational. And what's really neat is that a few years ago, this young woman showed up in our service along with her husband, and she just had one baby at that time. And I was like, I recognize her. And so after the service, I went up and I was like, Laura, Laura Gent? And she's like, yes. And I realized that she was my small group leader from when I was in junior high at Rolling Hills, our much beloved small group leader. So that's a really neat connection that I have to Rolling Hills from Portland Mennonite now. Also, Rolling Hills, so it was non-denominational, it's evangelical, sort of like a Saddleback, if people know Saddleback, which is a big evangelical church. But I learned when I eventually went to go serve a Baptist church down in Dallas, Texas, is that they were started by 4 Baptist couples. So sort of ecclesially, theologically, it's really Baptist.
So you went to a Christian high school and graduated in
2005.
did you know what was coming next, and when and how was that decision made?
Yeah. So I went to Seattle Pacific, obviously in Seattle, and ended up majoring in theology and European studies Spanish. And my Spanish degree, I thought of as my practical degree, and theology was just because I loved it, like just because I wanted to study it. But what's funny is that it's actually become my career. You just don't know what is going to lead where. So yeah, I was there for 4 years, and then I came back to Lake Oswego for a year, and then after that is when I went to Duke for seminary.
Can you kind of pinpoint a time in your life when you figured out that, well, you said you really loved theology and you were obviously surrounded with religion and God your whole life, but was there sort of a moment when you said, yeah, I'm going to study this even if it may not lead to a career because it's important to me?
Well, I'm a little more practical than that, Gloria. I mean, I definitely studied it because I loved it, and it definitely wasn't fully practical. But when I went to Duke, I had two plans in my mind. I would either go into residence life afterward, or I would go on, do my doctorate, and teach at the college level. Residence life is sort of working in college dorms. That's what I had been an RA in undergrad. And also when I was at Duke, I was sort of like the coordinator of the RAs for 2 years in the dorms at Duke, which, let me tell you, the dorms at Duke are very different than the dorms at Seattle Pacific University.
Can you give us an example?
Oh my gosh. Well, my first year in the dorms at Duke, I lived on a floor that was all football players from the Duke football team. And I would wake up to neon colored vomit outside of my door. They were so nice. I don't want to give them a bad name, but Duke is very much with the student population. It's work hard, party hard. It's high achieving kids who aren't always happy. I mean, that's my two cents, but they're super bright and really, really fun kids too.
Now, Duke is all the way over in North Carolina, I will just point out, and you are from Portland and went to Seattle. Why did you choose Duke, and what was it like to be on the other coast?
Well, Gloria, it was really interesting. It's also interesting to be in the South, but I'm going to tell you a little story. When I graduated from SPU, I applied to two seminaries. So I applied to Fuller, which was down in Southern California, and it's evangelical. Sort of from where I was coming from with my evangelical background, that would have been like right on the edge of what was still Christian. You know, Fuller would have been maybe the more liberal school, but still evangelical. We've heard of Fuller. Duke would have been off the grid into godless liberalism. But my advisor from undergrad spoke really highly of Duke and said, if you want to sort of take your next step theologically, that's where you'd go. I also didn't think I could get into Duke. I had not done well in a class because I had a lot of late papers in undergrad. So I was like, I don't know if I can get into Duke. But I ended up applying, and Fuller accepted me. Duke waitlisted me. So I moved forward with Fuller, and this was probably in July of 2010. I found a roommate down in California, Stormy. Her name was Stormy. And I put my deposit down at Fuller, and I had also found an apartment. We had found an apartment to live in, and that all happened on a Thursday, and on Friday, I drove up to Tacoma to be in my cousin's wedding, my cousin Annette. And as I was driving up there, I've really only sort of had God directly speak to me a handful of times in my life, but this was one of them. As I was driving up, I felt a hand on my heart, like I just, I really felt a hand on my heart and a voice, not audible, but within me, to say, you're moving too fast at Fuller. 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 And I was like, what's happening to me? So I was like, I don't really know what to do with that. And over the course of that weekend at my cousin's wedding, all of the girls there were in grad school. One of them had just graduated from Duke, from grad school at Duke. And they were like, Britt, you need to go out and visit in person if you want to get into grad school. And then the pastor who was officiating my cousin's wedding, his new neighbor, who he had met the husband but never the wife, she was moving out the next month, this new neighbor's wife, and she ended up being the pastor of the congregation in Duke Chapel, and her former intern was the head of admissions at Duke Divinity School. And so all of a sudden, I had a connection to the admissions department at Duke Div. He put me in contact with her. And after that weekend, I decided I needed to fly out. So I had 48 hours off at work. So I flew out to North Carolina, used my savings. I was still waitlisted at this point. I wasn't admitted. It was late July. Classes started in August. And so I ended up going on a tour with the director of admissions. And at the end of that tour, he sat me down and he said, Britt, this is a really unusual year. We usually have people decline their offers of admission and we take people off the wait list, but we haven't had that happen this year until yesterday, when a boy called up and declined his offer of admission. And so we would like to offer that spot to you. And I was shocked because I thought I was just doing my due diligence to say, I'm not going to go to Duke. I'm going to go to Fuller. I'm just, okay, God, you said I'm moving too fast at Fuller. I'm doing my due diligence. But that ended up being the place that I needed to be and where God had for me. So sort of a cool story.
An awesome story. Did you say yes right then when he offered you the slot?
No, I was shocked. I was like, oh, I need to think about this. But I flew back home, and after worship the next day, it was a Sunday, I was down at a friend's house, and I started singing, In My Mind, I'm Going to Carolina. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to North Carolina. So that's how I made my decision.
And how many years were you there?
I was there for 3.
Did you know what was going to come next after that? By then, had you made a decision about possibly being a pastor, or when did that whole thing sort of start to become a possibility?
I actively did not want to be a pastor. I did not want to be a pastor. And I even have a journal entry that says, God, I don't want to be a pastor. And I would not think it's funny if you call me to be a pastor. But that happened my 3rd year. That was actually another amazing story for another day. But that was one of the other handful of times that I felt God and heard God's voice. So that was my last year of seminary and caught me by surprise. But another pastor who was in my life at that time said, shouldn't be that much of a surprise that you're being called to be a pastor, Britt. You are in your 3rd year of seminary. So
there are a couple more things that I want to talk about. So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. And I know that you were at several churches before you came to Portland Mennonite. When and how did you first learn about Mennonites?
Oh, from Corey Duffy at Seattle Pacific University, who I had a crush on. He was really cute, and he lived on a boat in the canal because he was living simply, and he was a Mennonite. I mean, he had become a Mennonite, wasn't raised that. And I just thought Corey was super cool. And so that's how I really first heard of Mennonites. And then in seminary, I kept on getting crushes on Mennonite boys. I don't know. I think I don't know what it is, but I like Mennonites. But also during seminary is that I came to a really strong conviction about the way of Jesus being a way of peace, and a conviction about nonviolence and pacifism. And I became a pacifist. And so Mennonites are Anabaptist. And so what I realized is that my sort of Baptist theology, when you add that to pacifism, you get Mennonites. So it was a really natural move for me. I also, during seminary, became involved with restorative justice, and that's a passion of mine. And so it was a really natural fit.
And remind me what year you came to PMC.
I started in 2016, right before the election.
Well, we're going to do a little segue here since you talked about your crushes on Mennonites. We're in the midst of a pandemic and you are a single lady.
Yeah.
Would you like to be dating or thinking about dating in a pandemic?
Oh my gosh, Gloria Nussbaum. So I've done online dating off and on for the past few years and lots of thoughts on that. But during this pandemic, it's been a little interesting because everything is socially distanced. So you can't just go on a date like you would normally. But what's sort of fun is, so this would have been maybe a month and a half ago, is 1 week I was going on dates with three different guys, all sort of socially distanced. And the first two guys were super, super nice. But I was really excited about my third date. So I went on a date. We went out to dinner outside, had sushi. And I really liked this guy named Brandon. And so after that, I was like, I'm going to put you in my bubble. And so we had a really nice time. And so we've been actually dating for the last month or so. And so, yeah, so I have a boyfriend. I found a boyfriend during a pandemic, Gloria. How does that happen?
I think I just had a news flash here.
Breaking news. You heard it here first, folks.
He's not a Mennonite?
No, he's a Lutheran. So this is something different for me. I crushed my way into becoming a Mennonite myself. So yeah, so he's Lutheran, but he's wonderful. He's super, super great.
I'm so happy for you.
Oh, thank you, Gloria.
We have a few minutes left. If you could pick the perfect day to do whatever Brit wants to do, there wasn't a pandemic, life was quote unquote normal, what would Brit be doing?
Oh my gosh. Okay, I think I'd wake up in the morning and I would have crispy bacon and strawberries. And then I would go on a hike in the morning time and just something beautiful, like some beautiful, spectacular hike. And then in the afternoon, I'm going to pack a lot into this day. And then in the afternoon, I'd like explore a new city, just like discovering new things and walking around. And then in the late afternoon, I would get a massage. And then I would go out for maybe with Brandon. We'll include him in this day. I'd go out for a romantic dinner, like a late night dinner. I love a late dinner, like 8 p.m. at like a fancy restaurant. And that would be my perfect day.
And you did just mention food a couple of times. And I do know a little more about you. And that is, cooking is not your forte. I'm just curious how you're surviving in a pandemic. So how is that going? Have you learned new skills? What's going on with food in your life other than going out to your lovely dinners and having strawberries and bacon for breakfast?
Well, what my sisters like to say about me is, okay, how to describe this? So it's, they'll go journaling, 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 cooking, cooking, cooking. Like I go to extremes and I get really into things. Yeah, I am not a cook, though I do put some of that down in the last 4 years to the fact that I don't have a dishwasher. I actually do think that that's part of what's going on. But I love to have dinner parties and I love to cook fancy meals. So during the pandemic, one of the things in the early days that I did was I would actually meal plan, shocking, and I made some very elaborate recipes. I made a Bon Appetit's there. I made a lot from Bon Appetit, which I've learned my lesson. Don't go to Bon Appetit for like for your recipes. But I made a lasagna that I didn't read the directions on beforehand and took me 5 hours nonstop. I was actively cooking for 5 hours. I made like a black sesame mochi cake. I made blueberry muffins that were very good from the New York Times cookbook, which are delicious. I made chocolate sables. I made this real, actually, I made this just last night. This is one that I'm going to be taking forward. It's like a winter squash and halloumi. They call it a salad, but it's sort of like a bake. It's really, really tasty. But yeah, since the pandemic, it's not in the hard shutdown anymore. I've gone back to my old ways of sort of getting Fred Meyer sushi and carrot soup. I love orange carrot soup that you can just dump into a bowl and have some good bread with. So I'm sort of reverting back to my non-cooking ways.
You're looking forward to what life will be like again after we're out of this craziness.
I really, really am, Gloria. I really, really am.
Well, there's obviously so much more that we could talk about, such as doing church during a pandemic. And I do have one more question. What is it like to preach to a screen?
Well, some of it is just the technical part of like trying to figure out angles, you know, and making sure your sound quality is decent, making sure that you can see your face, like a lot of things that we just don't have to think about normally. And then internet connection, of course, as well. But especially at the beginning, it was a little odd to be preaching to your own face. I mean, that's all I see on the screen when I preach. I see my manuscript and then I see my face because Kurt will have me spotlighted on our Zoom. And to not, I mean, preaching is a back and forth, even though, you know, we're a white congregation. And so we sit there and we listen and we maybe nod. So there's not like amens coming back at me. There's still, you can tell when people are tracking. And usually with our sharing time, there's some of that feedback there. But it's a little different. It's a little different. But you know, it's as with this pandemic, I've also been amazed at how much we've been able to carry forward as well. And that's the same with preaching is I still do feel like I'm preaching. So
it's just another skill set in some ways.
Yeah. Yes. In fact, it is.
Fritt, there's so much more that we'd love to know about you, but thank you so much for giving us some insights into your life.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Gloria, for having me. This has been super fun.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. We hope you discovered something new and feel more connected to your friends at Portland Mennonite. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.